On the morning of Saturday, 10th of May, Donald Trump posted on his Truth Social platform that a ceasefire had been agreed between India and Pakistan after weeks of rising tension and military strikes. The two South Asian powers faced off with each other, raising concerns this could turn into an all-out war between two nuclear powers. Pakistan's use of Chinese platforms, India's loss of French jets, the US intervention, and the first Cold War between the West and the East are just some of the issues analysts are poring over, and that is exactly what we will do today. Here to help unpack this all is Geopolity founder Adnan Khan. How are you keeping, Adnan? Everything's kicked off and then quieted down very quickly.
Yeah, I'm good, Yusuf. Yeah, that's probably a good way to describe it. We're in the middle of a war and then apparently we're not now.
I just want to remind the audience that you can find us on all social media platforms. You can subscribe and you won't miss a thing. Adnan, this all began with an armed attack on the 22nd of April in Pahalgam, a tourist town in Indian-held Kashmir. India, they blame Pakistan for this. And now 3 weeks on, what's your view on this? Was Pakistan behind it?
So according to India, they, within hours, firmly blamed Pakistan. This was an armed assault. For them, this was history repeating itself. Pakistan, according to them, has been a state sponsor of terrorism. During the 90s, you had many Pakistan-backed groups who carried out assaults in Indian-held Kashmir and India. Probably the most recent was the Mumbai attacks around a decade ago. So as far as they were concerned, Pakistan was behind this, and here we go again. Now, I actually feel 3 weeks on, this doesn't actually add up. In fact, a lot of it doesn't really add up. Pakistan has disbanded the jihadi groups it backed. This was one of the conditions of the war on terror. This was something imposed upon General Musharraf by the Americans when they invaded the region. Whilst America implicitly supported Pakistan in the 90s, come 2001 onwards, that was the end of that. So what General Musharraf did was he banned most of the jihadi groups. Their leaders were imprisoned, their assets were seized, and the training camps were all closed down. So really what you find is these jihadi groups don't exist. In fact, this caused tension within Pakistan because these were groups that were backed. So for India to accuse Pakistan of backing a group and doing this, that doesn't really add up in my opinion. Now, I think there's two possible things that could have happened here. Now, the group that carried out the attack, they said, so this is a, I think they called the Kashmir Resistance Front, and they apparently are linked to Lashkar-e-Taiba, which was one of the jihadi groups Pakistan used to back in the day, which they've completely like dissolved and their leaders were imprisoned. So there's really two options, in my view, which I've come to more in the recent days. And this is by just looking at the timing, why now, things like this. So the group that undertook the attack, their reasons were purely domestic. They're arguing that since 2019, when India joined Kashmir to mainland India, until then, Kashmir, Indian-held Kashmir had a special status. So since then, there seems to be some attempt by India to change the demographics in Indian-held Kashmir. So a lot more people are moving there, and this is quite common in occupations. So their argument was because of this, this is why they conducted the attack. So they cited domestic reasons. What then India is trying to argue is, oh, because these guys trained in Pakistan, then they, you know, it's a safe haven for the jihadi groups. So until today, they've not provided any evidence for this. Now, I'm coming down to the conclusion, really two things. Immediately when this attack happened, you find that India said they are now ripping up the Indus Water Treaty. And actually now I feel this is probably the reason why this occurred. And what I mean by that is there's two things that could have happened. One is this was a false flag attack, and the whole idea behind it was that they can get out of the Indus Water Treaty. Or the second was, is the plan was always to get out of the Indus Water Treaty, but they needed a justification to do it, and that came along now. And now, the reason why I said it could be a false flag attack is because the senior officers in India's war intelligence, they've been removed because there was a leak on a Telegram group which actually talked about a false flag attack. And even some personnel in the army have actually been moved around as well. So looking back now, India got out of the treaty straight away, and I feel that's probably the aim. And obviously what they're doing is they're using Pakistan's historical support for jihadi groups as a pretext. But those groups have all been disbanded. They were smashed, really, by the Pakistan military and the Pakistani intelligence.
We'll come back to the water treaty in a moment. But just before that, India obviously responded in their Operation Sindoor on Tuesday, the 6th of May. A lot of people are saying things didn't really go to plan. What was India's objective in this? Did it go to plan?
So May the 6th, they launched their assault. They were talking about doing this for since April 22nd. They called it Operation Sindoor. And what they did was they carried out strikes along the line of control. And they carried out a few attacks inside Pakistan as well. And they argued these were precision strikes, which targeted militant training camps. Now, what happened, though, was obviously Pakistan was expecting this. So they were prepared. And what Pakistan managed to do was they actually took down some of their jets. And obviously the propaganda war went into operation immediately from both sides. So there's a lot of misinformation. But what you find then is very quickly, India began sending drones because their jets really were being threatened. And this actually became quite a classic of the air warfare that actually took place. So India launched the operation. It didn't go according to plan. In fact, I think they were quite surprised. I don't think they expected Pakistan's response or defense to be such. But I think we've got to keep in mind that Pakistan's response to the Indian onslaught was defensive. What they did is defended their airspace. And on the whole, they didn't go into Indian airspace. So if India was struggling with that, any retaliation from Pakistan, which was offensive in nature, India would have struggled. So even before Pakistan's onslaught started, India was really struggling. Their jets were in the air. Their jets struggled. A number of them were taken out. And the fact that they had to resort to drones really proves that the operation didn't really go according to plan.
Pakistan responded with Operation Bunyan Marsoos 4 days later. Why did it take so long for them to respond? That's 4 days.
Yes, that's a million-dollar question. You've been attacked, so you'd think you would defend your country, obviously, and you would begin some sort of offensive operation. Now, what Pakistan officially kept saying is they will respond at a time and place of their own choosing. In fact, even the people of Pakistan were like, when are you going to respond? So Operation Sindoor started on Tuesday, and we're now 4 days, so we're getting to Friday evening. Pakistan hadn't actually carried out an offensive operation. What they did was they defended their land, and they did that pretty successfully. So the counterattack took 4 days, and everyone was saying, what on earth is going on here? You need to respond. And it was really interesting that the army, the defense forums, analysts were all repeating the government and the military line, which is, we will respond, and our response will be great, and our response will shake you, and it will be at a place and time of our own choosing. Now, when Pakistan did respond with strikes, they targeted Indian air bases. They used their jets to do this. They used missiles and they used drones as well. And this is what actually overwhelmed India. And I don't think India was expecting this. And they weren't expecting Pakistan to lead such a coordinated onslaught. So it seems they were caught out by that. But I think in time, you know, with all wars, when they studied afterwards, you know, 4 days was a very long time. And as I'm sure we're going to discuss, Pakistan's response, even after 4 days, was so significant that, you know, ceasefire talks began straight away. But I think more likely what could have happened is Pakistan was calculating the type of response it wants to give. You know, the thing with Pakistan is the leaders of Pakistan, the military leadership, the political leaders, they don't really like to do anything which is beyond the international order. This is a country that takes loans. This is a country where half the budget is to repay loans. So a lot of their thinking is around this. And I suspect this is probably what was going on. They were deciding the type of response they want to give, despite people wanted blood on the streets. The people of Pakistan wanted a response. And in the end, they gave quite a severe response. But it came after 4 days. If it had come earlier, the outcome may have been very different. And we would have been having a different discussion now.
India spends absolutely billions on their defence budget, something that Pakistan can't even compare with. So why was India so surprised by this response?
So like you said, India has spent billions on modernising its jets, on training. Its platforms in many ways are way more expensive than Pakistan. But what Pakistan did is they used their Chinese-made platform for the JF-17 Funder. This is actually a jet Pakistan and China manufactured together. And what we saw was Pakistan's use of China's J-10s. And we saw Pakistan make use of Chinese air-to-air missiles. Now, Pakistan has around 400 jets, and half of these used to be the F-16. These were the American F-16. This was the mainstay of Pakistan's fighting force. That's now changed. What you now find, Pakistan's main jets in any war scenario are these Chinese jets, the JF-17 and the J-10s. The other thing that India didn't anticipate was Pakistan's use of beyond visual range missiles. So these were the air-to-air missiles that have probably the first time we've seen them in a real war setting, actually. So these were beyond visual range. So they travel around 100 kilometers. They're connected to radar. They're hard to track and they get to their target. Now, this was something India hasn't seen before from Pakistan and it actually didn't anticipate. I would even add, even the Chinese kit that Pakistan has got, I don't think India or America or France anticipated it would be of this quality. India, on the other hand, were using French Rafales, which performed absolutely poorly. But we've got to keep in mind, India has a major problem with corruption in its defense industry. What you find is politicians want kickbacks, and even the amount India paid for these Rafales is highly questionable, considering there are much other cheaper and more capable jets. So what's actually very possible here is the corruption and the overselling of the capabilities of these jets now actually caught up with India. There's actually a famous saying amongst Indian pilots that India's jets, they're flying coffins. When you fly them, you're going to be flying to your death because of how bad they are. A lot of them have had maintenance issues. India still flies a lot of old Russian jets as well, and they don't really have a particularly good history. So when you start comparing the jets that were used, the missiles that were used, Pakistan, despite having a fraction of India's budget, what you found was that they made good use of the small budget they have. And as they've proven, the Chinese, really going to the Chinese paid off for them in the end.
Not long after we had ceasefire, what were the circumstances around the ceasefire? I mean, there was a CNN report about worrying developments the US has received from their intelligence. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
So we still don't know the specific intelligence America received, but clearly that's what got America going. What it seems as though is, I mean, Donald Trump even said when this all kicked off, this is a regional domestic issue. This is between the two parties to really decide. But what you find is by Friday evening, so May the 9th, what you find is the Americans are worried. They received the intelligence. Now, the only thing it can really be was Pakistan was going to do a counterattack, likely deep into India. And India, by May the 9th, was already struggling. So they've had 3 or 4 days. They've been caught on the back foot. They've had to make use of drones. Pakistan, in defensive mode, has taken down Indian jets. And now if Pakistan's going on the counter, India's going to have serious problems. And this is where you see that India, it turned to America straight away. It turned to America. And this is when America got involved and it started saying that there needs to be a ceasefire. So this is despite Trump saying it's a regional issue. I mean, you'd think Trump was getting ready for his tour to the Middle East. So the intelligence that the CNN reported, it speaks of a worrying development. So that can only mean one thing, really, is that what was going to happen was going to go against what the US agenda is in the region. And the US agenda would have been is India would have taken a severe hit, which would have potentially changed the status quo in the region. So I think in time we'll find out more what was going on, but it's likely around what I've actually just said, that America got to the point where India was doing so poor that if Pakistan had continued and expanded its counterattack, it would have changed the status quo in the region.
One of the first things that India did very early on was they revoked the Indus Water Treaty. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? What is it? What are its implications now that they've actually pulled out of it?
Hmm. So this is really the crux of the issue, this Indus Water Treaty. So when Pakistan and India were created, when they were partitioned, what you find is for north of India and for all of Pakistan, the waters, the main rivers, they come from the Himalayas and they come through Kashmir. And then you have an element that goes into India and then you have an element that goes into Pakistan. So because they were into war over Kashmir, what you find is all the waters of Pakistan actually go through Indian-occupied Kashmir, and so Pakistan is downstream. So if India was to build dams, if India was to restrict water flow, then Pakistan's agriculture couldn't physically exist. So shockingly, by 1960, despite the animosity between both countries, they agreed this Indus Water Treaty, where they effectively agreed to share the water. And India agreed not to build dams so the water keeps going further down into Pakistan. Because if India builds dams, it will then divert the waters and the waters will never get to Pakistan. So what's interesting and what makes me think this was the plan, the whole reason for the war, is Pakistan and India went to, so this treaty was in 1960. Pakistan and India went to war in 1965. India didn't revoke the treaty. Pakistan and India went to war in 1971. India didn't revoke the treaty. Pakistan and India went to war in 1999. They didn't revoke the treaty. You had the Mumbai attacks. You had the Balakot attacks 2019. You've had various attacks in between by armed groups. Never did India ever revoke the treaty. On this occasion, they did. And this actually poses a real problem for Pakistan because this is going to affect the economy. And what's interesting is Pakistan didn't change this status when it had the advantage. So this is actually a big problem for Pakistan going forward. This is really, you know, in many ways, Pakistan's won the battle, but they may lose the war. And India lost the battle, but they may very well still win the war because the water treaty is actually a strategic issue.
So with that in mind, what options does Pakistan really have?
So there are two options, really. There is the Ukraine route, if Pakistan decides to take that. And that is you go with your begging bowl to India, like Ukraine did to Russia and America, and you just beg for a ceasefire and you beg for terms. And what India will do is what Russia's doing, which is, here's all our terms, you agree to them, and then we're in business. The other option you got is Pakistan actually builds its capabilities now, and it goes and finally unifies with Kashmir, it occupies Kashmir, and therefore there's no water issue because it controls the whole of Kashmir. Obviously, if Pakistan does that, it needs to build the capabilities for that. It needs to prepare for that. These are the only really two options. So up until Musharraf's era, Pakistan's strategy was if they were going to bleed India to death. They were backing these militant groups. They were arming them. And every once in a while, the army would side with them and they'd carry an insurgency to bleed India to death. After 2001, after Musharraf, they stopped doing this. So effectively, for the last two decades, Pakistan's abandoned Kashmir. And now it's come to bite them. So really, they need to go back to what the original strategy was, which was to bleed India to death and then go and reunify with it. And now it's become a strategic economic issue now.
How likely do you think that is? Where do things stand with Kashmir now?
So 22nd of April was when the armed assault took place. And on the 6th of May, India began its assault. And after ceasefire now, nothing's actually really changed. What you find is Kashmir is still, you've got Indian-held Kashmir, you've got Pakistan-held Kashmir, you've got the undecided status of the whole territory. What's happened is Pakistan went to war with India, and despite being in a position of strength and it had the advantage, it didn't build upon this to change the status in Kashmir. It didn't even strike any of India's dams. It didn't even strike the capital of Indian-held Kashmir, Srinagar. So really, Pakistan, despite being in an advantageous position, it didn't capitalize upon that. In fact, in a position of strength, Pakistan agreed to a ceasefire. This is why, if you look at in Ukraine, why is Russia dragging its feet over a ceasefire or over a permanent agreement? Because it's in a position of strength. Why do they need to compromise one inch? So really, after all this war for the Kashmiri people and the issue of Kashmir, nothing's actually changed. What has changed is Pakistan having an opportunity to change the status quo, it agreed to a ceasefire.
If we zoom out and look at the wider region, where do things stand now with obviously India, Pakistan, but China and their US as an overlooking power?
Yes, so this war, it's given an opportunity for everyone to see China's military capabilities in a real war setting. So everyone's now studying China's fighter jets. Everyone's now looking over their surface-to-air missiles. And everyone's now going to start looking at, they're going to start looking at China's broader military modernization. Because what's happened is in a real war setting, they effectively dealt a blow to a Western-backed military. Okay, they weren't American weapons, but generally, if you look at India, it's really started to shift away from being a Russian-dominated military to one which is dominated by French platforms, American platforms, and Israeli technology. So that's why when we look at the region, China is now a player, and actually it's got involved in a war where it's actually created a big dent. The other thing now is the Cold War 2.0 is on. If you take your mind back, the Soviet Union and America, they supported proxy groups, they supported rulers, they didn't directly fight each other, but they armed other organizations and leaders and countries. And if you look at the 1967 war between Israel and the Arab countries, it was really a war between an American-backed country, Israel, and a Soviet Union-backed country, Egypt and Syria. And because Israel won, technically, it showed that the American weapons are better than the Soviet weapons. So in the first round of this Cold War 2.0, China's now 1-0 up. So that's a massive regional development. Also, the American plan for this region, India is at the center of it. India is supposed to be the regional power that counters the power of China. Now, that's taken a bit of a reality check. It doesn't mean India's down and out. It doesn't mean it can't be changed, but it's taken a dent and America's hit a reality check. And America was already not completely happy with India. They feel India's happy with having an economic relationship with China, but America wants it to be a competitor to China, be a counter, and India's been dragging its feet. So yeah, if we zoom out, these are actually quite significant developments. The great power competition between China and America is on, and the first proxy battle, China's come out top.
So obviously India is very much a US ally. Pakistan is a US ally, but it seems obviously in this case, the US has taken India's side. Why hasn't Pakistan chosen to take different allies such as China?
So this has been the problem really with Pakistan's leadership, whether it's military or political. What you find, and I would even say this is a good example of just a colonized mind. As far as Pakistan's elite are concerned, they want to be on the side of the West. They want to be on the side of America, who's a global superpower. So they've actually gone against the national interest in actually doing that. So they sided with America in the war on terror. It cost Pakistan billions. Lots of people died in Pakistan. And America treated her like an abused wife, like a mistress. And this has been the history between Pakistan and America going back really to the 1950s when they first had relations. The problem with the Pakistani elite is they just don't see a world beyond America. They feel being with America gives them honor, gives them respect, and they just don't see anything beyond that. They are literally intellectually colonized. So even though American policymakers, American think tanks have made clear that India is who they see as a regional power, they want to work with her, they want to build her up. In fact, they see Pakistan being subordinate to India. So India doesn't focus on Pakistan anymore, it focuses on China. But despite this political reality, despite the global system being in a flux, despite the emergence of China, Pakistan has a relationship with China that goes back to the 60s. Despite all of that, the Pakistani elite still see the future with America. For the moment, nothing's happened where they feel they need to abandon it. No faction has emerged in Pakistan that is strong enough to shift Pakistan's allegiances to someone else. And on top of that, even China's been trying to win the loyalty of Pakistan. They've invested in Pakistan. They built the CPEC, the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. Despite all of that, when it comes to strategic political matters, Pakistan is well and truly in the American camp. You saw that with the Afghan invasion in the region. Politicians in Pakistan, they don't send their kids to China to go and study and get educated. They send them to America. They send them to the West. So there's an intellectual issue here, and that's why Pakistani leaders actually contradict the national interest in trying to maintain this relationship.
A final question for you, Adnan. If you were an advisor, political advisor for these countries, so Pakistan, India, China, what would you be advising them to do in this scenario?
So if we start with India, back to the drawing board. There's a problem with your military modernization. Clearly, you've paid over the odds for some French platforms that don't do what it says on the tin. So they need to have a relook at that. They need to look at their whole military. Do you really need a military with these fancy weapons? So, for example, why did India not carry out a bombing attack in Pakistan? Why did they not back proxy groups in Pakistan? But they don't have any. That's not the strategy that they have. So for them, when they look at Pakistan, they think, we use our air force, we use our troops. They're not going to do an invasion, so it's going to be your air force. This is very limiting. You see, Pakistan built proxy groups back in the day. It's abandoned them now, but that was their strategy. So India, I think, even needs to decide what is your role in the region, because America's trying to push you towards China. You've still got this relationship with Pakistan where you think we need to deal them a blow. And then secondly, the BJP that are in power now, their view really is we want Pakistan to be a second-class citizen in the region where India dominates it. And that gets in the way of strategic things that they could potentially achieve. So, yeah, my advice to India would be back to the drawing board. All that money you spent, all those funny ideas you had about the future of the region, they're up in the air, so back to the drawing board. If I'm China, this is the first time your equipment be used in a real-world setting. And what it really shows is the strategy you've had in place for 2-3 decades is now paying off. You created these weapons. These are all manufactured by China themselves. When Pakistan and China agreed, I think in the late 90s, to co-produce a fighter jet, no one understood why. China's got better jets. Pakistan has very little capability. But China's been trying to build a relationship with Pakistan. And really, after this war, maybe some leaders in Pakistan may consider China is a better ally. So really, for China, what's happened is the thing that they were targeting, they've now been proven in the real-world setting. So now they can build more upon that. They don't need to make any drastic changes. They're going in the right direction. In terms of Pakistan, well, as we discussed, it needs to make a choice. The world is changing. A competitor is arising. America has abandoned Europe. It's left Europe to their own devices. And you don't think they can't do that to Pakistan? Pakistan's not even in the same camp as Europe. So really, if I was an advisor to Pakistan, I'd be saying it wasn't America that came and helped you in this war. It was China that helped you. So really, maybe you should be allies with China. And then maybe that is something you need to be pursuing rather than America, because America still abuses them. So yeah, if I was an advisor to Pakistan, they need to really reconsider their political relationships.
Thanks for your time today, Adnan. If you want to learn more about the issue we've raised today or any other issue, check out our website, www.thegeopolicy.com. You'll find comprehensive insights, analysis, articles, deep dives. I'm Yusuf. Thank you for listening.